All right. I think we'll begin. We're a minute past, and I think we've got a lot, probably a lot to talk about here. This Zoom topic seems to have been a hot one for a lot of people. Anyway, welcome to this month's KISSA Zoom Roundtable, and thank you all for attending. These calls are a member benefit, and the membership allows us to continue the important work that KISSA does, including running roundtables such as this. So thank you for your membership. Or if you're just a guest today, please consider joining. That would be awesome. We encourage all participants to share your thoughts on skier retention. I know I've spoken to many, but not everybody. So we're always interested in some new tips and tricks, specifically ones that we haven't come up with ourselves. Please keep your mic muted unless you have been invited to speak. That will allow whoever is talking the ability to all of us the ability to hear. So with that said, we have a distinguished panel today, and they include Roger Lohr, owner of xcskiresorts.com in New Hampshire, Jen Santoro, program coordinator for Utah Nordic Alliance, and naturally that's in Utah, Nancy Leon, Jackson Hole Nordic in Wyoming, and Ellen Chandler, executive director of Jackson Ski Touring in New Hampshire. I'm going to start with Roger. And Roger, you've been talking about skier retention, at least to me, for the last several weeks. And you recently sent out a piece entitled "Encouraging Skier Return and Retention," and in on that you list five areas to focus in on. So I'd like to take a few minutes and look at each of those areas. The first one you mentioned are incentives to return. Can you talk a little bit about what you found there?
Right. Well, that is what ski areas mostly do. I call it the most direct thing you can do, and that's offering, for example, a discount to return. It might be one, get one. It might be bring a friend. It might be buy a season pass this year, the end of this year, and use it next year. All of those things. And the ski areas have many more ideas in this area, are a direct incentive to return. You're almost paying somebody to return.
So, the one comment I want to make, and certainly we can't talk pricing here, but you mentioned the discount, and we have, as an industry, always discounted ourselves and our sport as something that you can do if you can't afford to alpine, or it's always been that, okay, if nothing else works, cross-country skiing will take you. And I know we talk about discounting, but our trail passes are in the $20 to $25 range, really a tremendous value for what we offer, especially when Piss and Bullies cost $250,000 plus. Are there other ways to run incentives without offering like a discount? Could it be I don't know, just other ways to not discount our services?
Yeah, one of the famous ways came up with John Tidd by John many, many years ago is called the Skier Achievement Card. And this is for everybody who takes a lesson. For example, you give them a card at the end of the lesson, highlight the things that they did well, and you say, I like to think that they should practice on, and obviously they can come back to practice. I have an old picture here of the actual card, and it shows you the little icons here from, tail marking would be advanced, or just diagonal striding would be a typical thing, herringbone. And that's a way, even the instructor could sign it and personalize it to somebody. But there are other things like creating a list of people. And I know Ellen's on the line. I know Tom Perkins many years ago started creating an email list with a shoebox, and people would write it down, their name, their list, their email, excuse me, and put it in the box. And he created, from zero, I'm sure they have tens of thousands of email names now. And you go to these people and you invite them to return, and you can actually create sub lists. So you have, renters. You could say, hey, you rented here, come back again. And you can rent a different type of, or talk to them about the renting. You actually tailor the email to the person from that list.
So that brings us to kind of the communicating with your customer.
Right.
And let's look at the different ways you can do that. So certainly one which I hope everyone is doing, is is requesting names from your skiers if you don't already have their database or them in your database. Do you have techniques that work well for doing that? Because frequently I see skiers that are not doing that.
Right. Well, you do have, for example, the lists of people who rent, the list of people who sign a waiver when you do this instruction. So those are two basic ones. If you can do a variety of, you know, when people sign up for anything, or the credit cards, or any kind of receipts where they're signing up for anything, that's how you start from zero. You just start adding them up, and it's amazing how quickly these things add up. The other thing is just talking to people. So you're walking around, maybe you're doing a survey or that kind of thing. Just talking with people who are in the place or going to take, you know, lessons or rentals. You could just walk up to somebody and say, hey, and just start a conversation and take their name if they want to give you their name. So some people are a little defensive about, you know, I don't want to be marketed to. And other people would love to hear your special offers or your special things about your resort.
I know when we get to Jen, she's got a nice little tip for collecting names. So we'll be interested in hearing about that. Roger, you also talk about learning about your customers more. I guess that's guest needs and expectations. What are some tactics there for skiers to do?
Well, that gets back to the surveying and what you're offering. So while, you know, the owner may be into racing, for example, if he has a bunch of families that come to his place with little kids, it's not racing. It's something different. So it's talking to your customers to find out what they want. Do they want short loops? Are they into, you know, 10-kilometer, 15-kilometer fitness performance type skiing? And then look at what the percentages are. So 17, 22%, that's not a majority of people. If you have 70%, you know, of people who are there and enjoying one type of thing, that's a majority. So that's to try to figure out what it is that they really want. And I personally love tracks. You know, I love to ski in tracks. I don't skate anymore. And I love when they have tracks and stuff. That's a bonus. If you have a lot of people who really love to ski in tracks, that's an important thing to fit. If they're expecting tracks, like tracks, want tracks, then you should have tracks because that's what your clientele wants. So that's also a survey issue if you want to get in the survey. But again, you could just talk to people and keep a little tally going.
If anyone on the call is currently surveying, just let us know in the chat because I'd be interested in learning a little bit more about what you're seeing there. We did have one of our annual meetings 2 years ago at Snow Mountain Ranch. We had a presenter on surveys, and it was quite interesting to hear about all of the information that they gather and then what they do with it. A little more advanced than some of what we're doing, but certainly something that many of the Alpine guys are doing. And then I think last, Roger, you talked about when to plan.
Right. What's today? The 24th of February. It's a little late, but as I said, you could just start with zero and go from there. But this kind of stuff has to be really planned early in the pre-season where you're developing. If you don't want to create that skier achievement card, you can create it right now, tomorrow, go get it printed up or whatever, or put it together on a piece of paper and on the computer and scan it and stuff, and then start handing them out from today, the 24th of February, or you could have started from the beginning. And so it's just how many you collect. But obviously, if you have time pre-season to consider ideas, strategize, be able to prepare materials, then it allows you a little more time and comfort to think things through, being into planning.
Awesome. Christy from Crested View just mentioned that they have a pretty robust CRM that they use to segment their participation. So Christy, we may come to you a little later in the call to get a little more information there. But thank you for that. I'd like to move to Jen now, Jen Santoro from Utah Nordic Alliance. And Jen, you guys have a kind of an interesting model. I know Richard has spoken about it before, so I'd love to hear a little bit about that. And then also talk, I think the way you look at retention is more from a programming standpoint. So tell us first about the model of Utah Nordic.
So we're a club. We offer racing. We offer instruction for adults. We offer kids programs, and we also maintain a track on a golf course where our volunteers groom it, and we charge $10 or $70 for a season pass if you're a member. So it's a good deal. And we have seen, like everybody, an incredible boom this year. Basically, talking about collecting those email addresses, something that I noticed by accident was I was charged with setting up our website, and we had decided to do online waivers for all of our programs. And the waiver company we went with was a company called Smart Waiver that puts a little widget on the corner of our website. And I maintain that. And as I was maintaining that this year, I started noticing these ridiculous numbers of people were signing waivers. And I thought that a bot had gotten into our system and was hacking us. But in reality, what it was people were coming to our website to ski for one day, and they were paying their $10 online, which we just instituted this year as touchless pay via Venmo and PayPal. And they were signing a waiver because there was a waiver to sign. And we don't need them to sign a waiver, but they were doing it anyway. And so now we have hundreds and hundreds of people who skied maybe for a day or two, and we have all their email addresses. And that got me thinking, wow, maybe we should reach out to those people at the end of this year, thank them for their, thank them for using our track and for paying their $10, and, you know, reach out to them for things that they can do with us next year to try to retain them. And when you said that I'm looking at retention from a programming standpoint, I think that from just a skiing in general standpoint, that people try skiing once and then it's too hard and then they don't do it anymore. So for us, I think we need to push education and lessons to a higher extent. We need to offer all those people who signed our waiver, for example, some sort of a package or a deal or a coupon for next year for a lesson. And then we need to gather some people to teach those. But if you're a ski area, you already have those people, it's marketing to them. Hey, look, you know, you may be a great athlete. Maybe you ride a bike in the summer. Maybe you think skiing is really hard. It doesn't have to be that hard. If you're fit, it's a technique sport. Maybe we can show you something.
Jen, have you looked at the database you created? You said that many of those people are coming just once. Is that true? Are you getting a lot of people this year specifically that are coming one time only, or are you seeing more repeat customers?
I'm going to have to look deeper as we are. I have my hands in so many things right now, youth program wise and everything. And Richard's laughing because he knows so many things I'm touching right now. And I haven't had time to really crunch the numbers. I'm also a volunteer. So this 40-hour a week job I'm volunteering for is getting huge. But when I do look at that, my background originally was in marketing and public relations. So I have some math, so some statistical analysis type stuff. And I do plan to look at how many people we had visiting once versus how many people we had visiting repeatedly. We really do try to market our pass as, look, you know, if you're a member of our club, you get all the discounts on everything. Oh, hello, cat. You get all the discounts on everything. Plus you get a $70 pass. And, you know, that's, if you ski seven times, you paid for your pass. And we've had far more grooming days than that. So I do plan to look at who we've had visit once. I'm guessing we had a lot of people visit once and then maybe buy a season pass, or visit once and then visit again. We've seen a lot of new people this year though. And as a club, I think we've kind of sent the message out, hey, when you see a new person, just introduce yourself and offer them a tip, show them the trails. We have new signage that directs people to a safe and easy place to put their skis on and which way to go if you're new. I think that went a long way this year. Because we're a club attached to a ski area, there's a lot we can do with our people, and everybody's kind of an ambassador. And I think if you're a ski area who has employees, that's a lot easier to do because you can make that part of their job.
Right. If any ski area who's on the call here has any, you know, data, even if it's anecdotal, about how many, about numbers of people that are just coming once and skiing versus those that are coming multiple times. One of the things that I find interesting this year, with so many people buying season passes for frequently the first time and so many people actually investing in equipment, it seems like many of those casual users are more vested this year. And I'm just wondering if that's actually the case and if that group is trying or is participating, you know, multiple times in the season, which would lead to the fact that they're, or lead us to believe they're having fun and sticking around.
I've seen a pattern of us introducing families through our youth programs. We've gained a lot of adult skiers by involving them at the most minor level, starting with in shoes with your four-year-old and moving up to, hey, would you mind putting on skis? You can learn with us. That's been a big part of it. And I think those people are coming back. And I think we also have a really unique situation here in Utah in that not only has alpine skiing become ridiculously expensive, you can't get in the canyons anymore to ski unless you get up at like 5 a.m. So I've seen a lot of families where they just don't have time to spend 3 hours in the car to go 7 miles with their little kids. And so they're bringing their little kids to Nordic Ski, and it's quick, it's easy, it's an hour. And I think we may retain some of those people. So if you live in an area where that's the case, little kids, you don't want to spend $100 to ski for 10 minutes, but cross country is cheaper and you can spend the money, bring the kids. And then those are the people who are coming back.
Right. And I think I've heard that same sentiment that the people are getting, are because of the restrictions on alpine. I know Ellen has said it, and Richard has also, that people are coming cross country skiing because that's all they can do. Hopefully they'll enjoy it enough to stick around. Jen, let's talk about kind of your packages and programming ideas that you're using for your retention. Like specifically, when we were on the phone earlier, you mentioned several. I'd love to hear a little bit about some of those.
Oh, shoot. I'm trying to remember. From a ski area standpoint versus a program standpoint, I'm also a ski ambassador for Solitude Nordic, which is a for-profit ski area. But they're an alpine area, so I don't think that they really take to heart just being a Nordic area. So it's one of those things where this is my list of stuff if I was running the show that I would want to see or I'd want to do. And the big one is, I think we talked about how when somebody rents skis, 9 times out of 10, they walk out of the door with the skis and then they don't know how to put them on. So they come back in and they have questions about how to put the skis on. And from a public relations standpoint, you know that your employees are going to be spending that 10 minutes with that new person anyway. So why not advertise that and make it count for you? So you say, all right, everybody who rents skis, if you're a first timer, you get a free 15-minute introductory lesson where an instructor will take you outside, show you how to put your skis on, show you which trails, and maybe just give you a few little pointers to get started. I know that I got stopped at White Pine, Richard, numerous times one day when I was there with brand new skiers by other brand new skiers who thought I was teaching a lesson and asked for tips. And I gave it to them. I come on. They just asked me how to get up the hill. I'm a nice person, Richard, and I like your place. So anyway, people do that anyway. So why not get credit as a resort for giving that extra little bit of customer service, going out and just helping people start. And telling them, you know, sometimes telling a person, look, I know you are a fit athlete, you're a triathlete and good at that. And I know that this sport is totally different. It's like really technique oriented. So you're going to go out and you're going to feel terrible about yourself. And that's okay because you'll get better. I promise. Just a few words. I really think if you just give people some hope, like it isn't going to be like this forever, but lessons are important.
Interesting. And we're seeing in the chat, that a couple ski areas, Woodstock and Great Glen specifically, will refund the price of your day pass if you then come in and buy a season pass. So a great incentive there without ultimately losing any money. You're converting that day pass to a season pass. And Christy says that, and I've heard this from others, that the season passes are still selling now, well into the season. So that's been super interesting. Jen, you talked about lessons being an important part of your retention because your thought is that skiers that ski better will enjoy it more and be more likely to come back. Do you guys offer lesson packages? I think you said you do have some midweek weekly programs.
So our club offers, besides all of our kid programs, which some of which are focused on like junior nationals development. And some of them are actually just focused on kids who don't want to compete and just want to ski. So we have groups of kids who just want to go skiing. We also have adult groups, and a lot of the parents of our, they run at the same time. So it's awesome because parents can bring their kids, drop them off. And then we have a Tuesday night skate group with two of our really good master skiers teach that. And a Thursday night classic group for beginners. Those are both for people to learn. And then we have a Wednesday night training group for people who already know how to ski. And I think there's a lunchtime group on Wednesdays too. And these are just all run by members of our club who are also coaches. And they've been, you know, every single one of our programs this year doubled. The adults who drop their kids off all want to learn how to ski too. So I think that weekly place to be. And then the other program that we kind of beefed up this year was our little baby program, which is on Sundays for 4 to 8 year olds. And I run that program, and I asked the parents if they had skis, if they want to ski, I asked them to participate with us. So it's kind of modeled a little bit like a Bill Koch league, but the parents are all required to be there. So since we require them to be there wiping noses and putting masks on this year, we told them, hey, come learn to ski with us. So I think some of those parents they've said they really like this and they like bringing their kid, but they also like the idea that they can do it too. It's not a drop off at soccer and sit in the stands kind of sport. So just involving the entire family.
For those adults, lesson type programs, what do you do there? Are they like women's mornings or guys' mornings or learn to skate, or, you know, what are kind of the categories that you found success with?
So this year, we offered a learn to skate on Tuesday for adults, and it wasn't divided by gender. I think we had, we meant to have about a 6-to-1 ratio, but it got so popular, I think we ended up with a 10-to-1 coach to instructor ratio. We'd love to make that better next year, but we just ran out of instructors. And then the learn to classic was our Thursday night program. So it was just classic. It was open to anybody 18 and over. And then the lunchtime group and the two Wednesday groups that we ran, the one at lunch and the one after work, those are for people who already ski, who want to get better. And those are both really focused on skate, which is kind of a bummer, but that's the instructors that we have. So I'd like to see that a similar classic group or a group that does both start to form. We used to have a group that did both on Tuesdays, and that was divided this year because more people wanted to learn classic, which is great. So I think what we'll do is just we'll respond to this year by trying to staff it better next year. I'm not actually in charge of those programs. I'm not in charge of anything. Richard's laughing because I'm not in charge of anything. But I'm the one who's writing the website and watching what's going on. So
right.
I guess that's – I'm an observer, and I try to fix things that are broken.
You mentioned also social events, and certainly this year specifically has been a challenge for anything social because we're not supposed to get together in person. But I believe you have an event coming up that is kind of a social type event. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We do. It's been a dream of mine for a while, and I actually talked Solitude into doing it last year, but they charged a lot of money and it still was popular. So this year we are offering on our track a free moonlight ski this Saturday night. And we decided that our junior programs are really in need of some more equipment. So we're having a silent auction. And that's just show up with your headlamp, ski with us. The track fee is waived. So if you want to bring a friend, wear a mask, stay apart, but it's all outside. BYO, whatever you want to fit in your pocket. Nobody's looking. Hopefully it'll be a really fun party. I think that we've seen in the past, I'm not in this age group, but the millennials and the zennials super into things like the kickball leagues a couple years ago where people would go play kickball and then go to a bar. I think if you're a ski area and you have a bar or restaurant offering outside of COVID times, offering just meetups where you could be like, hey, there's a group of single people or a group of families, whatever you want to do, meetups that involve like an après, building out that après scene a little bit, because some of the most fun time I race, but some of the most fun times I've had on skis have been groups of people getting together to go for a ski, like on a Friday afternoon and then going out to dinner. So, I mean, if ski areas can facilitate that kind of social aspect, I think we'll see a lot of the people who are just learning to ski, finding their people within skiing, and whether they decide to race or just be recreational skiers their whole life, they'll have more of a connection to the sport if there's something that's on skis and social. Because what I had noticed is most of our events in the past have always been either races or non-skiing social events. But I think that mixing the two is the no-brainer here. Think about an Alpine day. You go ski, and then maybe you go to the bar with your friends afterwards or have dinner. We don't have that culture scene in Nordic, but we can have that if we want to. It's not very hard.
That's something that KISSA has been pushing for the last couple of years. Those ski areas that don't have food or don't have beer, frequently, you know, what I've noticed in the ski areas that I've visited going around, people come, they ski a bit, and then they want a cup of coffee or they want something to eat.
Right.
Or it's in the afternoon, they want a beer, they want to hang out with their friends. And if that is not available at the ski area, then you're forcing that customer to go off site, and they will not come back. One kind of specific that comes to mind is Trap Family Lodge, where they've built this incredible brewery, and that's where they're trying to drive all their people. So, but they don't have, you know, they make their own beer, but they don't have a keg in their Nordic Center because they want to drive everyone there. Kind of my thought is, once you get in your car, you may or may not stop again. So really try and keep them there. You mentioned also progressive dinner and guided tours and moonlight skis. So all as additional kind of social events that you can do while skiing.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I first started, I'm kind of new to the sport. I started about 10, 11 years ago. And when I first came to the sport, it was painful. And it was me going out, doing a workout, and then getting in my car and going home. And then as I met people, started to make friends in the sport, it got really fun to just go for an easy ski with people. And it kind of replaced Alpine for me, because it's just, I like to go out and breathe hard and under my own power with all that light equipment on. But I also like my friends. So I've been trying to drag people into Nordic skiing forever now. And I'm kind of like, you know, it's Utah, so we have missionaries, lots of missionaries here. I'm kind of like a Nordic ski missionary. I'm not knocking on doors, but I am asking all my friends to try it. And some of them stay, but because we have fun now. And now that I'm coaching kids, I mean, that's all we do is have fun on skis. We're not thinking about training and racing. We're getting better at skiing though. And I think that's kind of the selling point with some of these social groups. It's, you can get better at skiing by just going skiing, but it should be fun. It shouldn't be like, this is my 1 hour of power. I mean, if you want it to be that, great. Go at lunch, do your intervals. But I also like to go just gang ski with friends. Just like, it's safer than Alpine touring. It's easier than getting to the resort. And I think that marketing that aspect of it, just we need to create a culture around the sport. The Nordic countries, everybody skis to some extent, but not everybody's on the World Cup team. And I think we have kind of a divide in our country, and Nordic skiing is seen as like bike racing, and Alpine skiing is seen as fun times. And I see Nordic skiing as fun times now too. So basically I'm looking to sell that idea to others. Like, this is fun. It's not just pain. If you learn how to go slow enough, and that takes time, but once you learn how to go slowly, you can actually have fun doing this and then go have drinks or coffee.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that the sport has battled, that perception. And I notice it when, especially when I speak with media, and I'm like, oh, you know, have you cross-country skied? They're like, no, it's hard. I'm like,
well, that's for nerds.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
It's hard and nerdy and dorky.
But it isn't.
I mean, it's called Nordorky. No, it isn't.
Not so much anymore. I want to go back to one last thing, Jen, the smart waiver. We talked about waivers a lot this summer, and we talked about the touchless systems earlier. Can you talk to us specifically about smart waiver, its cost, and its simplicity, if it is simple?
Okay, so super simple. And I can't remember actually how I got it on our website at this point, because it was so long ago. But I know it was really simple. I forgot how, so it must have been. The pricing was like, first of all, you can change your plan at any time, which is really important to me, because obviously we're a winter sport. I don't want to be paying a waiver service a lot of money over the summer while we're not doing anything. So it's basically pay as you go month to month. And I think it was $60 for 150 waivers. And I think we had to bump up to 600 waivers a month. So I think we bumped up to about $120, but I'm going to pull that up on my phone and maybe I can show it. There's literally a little widget at the bottom of our page that doesn't go away. So it's on every page, and that may be why people just felt so compelled. So here's our webpage on mobile. And at the very bottom, if you can see this little tab here, it's blue. And the company is smartwaiver.com. So if I click that tab, it asks to sign our waiver. And it has our own waiver, our own branding on it, our logo, and then our waiver language. And then you sign it, you get an email that says confirm it. And then you confirm it, and we get all of that that pushes out to an Excel spreadsheet. So there's a column that says email, and you can copy and paste right into an email. And it seems like people just sign it if it's there. If you're a ski area that requires a waiver to ski there, it's an easy way to generate a list of everybody who's been there and look like you're doing something responsible at the same time.
And it sounds like it's also an easy way to build that mailing list, which is super important. You know, and again, we've talked about that a lot. People that have paper waivers for rentals, they generally end up in a shoebox. They don't get digitized, and
7 years.
You get no benefit from them. So, okay.
Well, and you have to keep them. Have to keep them for the statute of limitations on personal injury, but they sit in a box and nobody's going to sit there and hand enter those emails.
Right. We do. We'll come back to that. What about, do you guys run any events that are non-races? We had a question about events.
It was a miracle this year. We got off all of our races, which is awesome. That was a big deal because of COVID. We have some annual events. We usually have a salmon bake in the spring where we have an auction and we invite the entire membership. And in the past, it's been our official membership meeting. But I think because of COVID, COVID's kind of like the excuse now to change how things operate and probably find better ways in the future. So I think this year, because of COVID, we're not having that indoor event. So we're looking at maybe having a food truck in the spring, which is something we usually do in the fall, and switching that up. But this Moonlight Ski is not the first time our club has done something like this, but it's the first time with this new crop of people that we've seen. And if it's successful, we're kind of hoping that we can add some more social events on skis, things that mix races or things that mix skiing with socializing. And one club in Idaho has raised a ton of money doing a progressive dinner, which we didn't want to do this year because of COVID, but in the future, we'd like to do it where junior parents each cook a dish and they set up a tent at our ski area. And then people just pay a certain amount of money to get in and then they can, you know, ski from tent to tent and sample food. I know that in West Yellowstone, they do a Taste of West Yellowstone event where they're probably not doing it this year, but where they do the same thing. They just have food out and people ski around and eat. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, awesome. All right, Jen, thanks so much. Let's move to Nancy Leone from Jackson Hole. Nancy, tell us first a little bit about your program, because you're not actually a ski area per se, but you represent cross country and pushing that out to your ski areas in the area. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Okay. Well, so yeah, thanks, Reese. So Jackson Hole Nordic is really the online communications portal for 10 different Nordic network systems. So about 200 miles of groomed trails, about 500 miles of ungroomed trails in the Jackson Hole and Teton Valley, Idaho area. And we formed a Jackson Hole Nordic Alliance about 8 years ago, which initially was my advisory board to basically just start documenting and promoting all the different Nordic skiing that no one knew about here in Jackson. We have such a big alpine brand that Nordic was just not even documented. There were no books, there were no maps. So Jackson Hole Nordic has now over 90 trails in GPS format on the website. We produce a daily trail email and a blog with all the grooming reports from over 40 different trails in this trails network. So we have 1,300 subscribers to our daily trail report in email. We have about 10,000 web hits a month on the website itself. And we also run Instagram and Facebook as well. So really trying to reach our community in whatever information platform that they get. The Nordic Alliance itself represents ski areas. It represents retail. It represents the ski club, kind of just the youth ski club that has the racing and ski programs. It has a number of nonprofits. So we have Grand Teton National Park that also has grooming, thanks to donations. We have the Bridger Teton National Forest that also has a huge amount of trails that are groomed, our local county parks and rec. So all of these members are part of our Nordic Alliance. We work together to make sure that we partner also with our Chamber of Commerce, our Travel and Tourism Board, to really get the information out to inform both local and visitor skiers.
Great. So let's go back to your newsletter. You were telling me that you have a pretty powerful ability to let people sign up for what they wanted out of your newsletter. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, so the newsletter is published from the 1st of December to the 1st of April daily. Out of season, it's published once a month to keep people engaged over summer. And people can either sign up for a daily email report or they can actually choose which day of the week they want, because we found in a resort mountain town, some people work on the weekends. Other people want the weekend edition because they have the weekends off. So we want to make sure that people don't have too many emails so they unsubscribe. And so we try to make it so personal that they can choose which day of the week to get that email. We also recognize that some people are not email people. You know, a lot of the younger generation don't want email, but they want to be able to look at the web when they want. And so we put that full email report on a blog on our website every day. And you also have a planning grid on our website. So you can look ahead at all the different Nordic trails in a grid that shows which day of the week they are groomed. So if you're trying to plan an event or, you know, an outing with friends 4 days away, you can look ahead and say, oh, here's all the 10 trails that are groomed on a Thursday, for example.
You mentioned the younger set does not necessarily want emails. Do you have a text alert system or any other way, Snapchat or anything else, to reach that younger group?
We're using mostly Instagram. And that seems to be, we have a very good following there. We have also a little over 1,000, maybe 1,100 followers today in Instagram. One of the things that we do is that we get a feed from all of the different groomers who all have different systems. So we might get a Twitter feed from Parks and Rec. We might get a Twitter or an email feed from the National Parks groomers. We go to a website for Teton Valley Trails and Pathways. So one of the beauties of this website, the whole idea was to have all the information on one platform, so people at a glance could quickly see where to go, what's groomed, what the conditions were. And so we were updating this daily trail report and also pulling everything in from all of these different sources every day. That makes sense.
Yep. So how do you handle that group that doesn't so much care about your grooming? They just want to go ski. So I'm thinking the person doesn't know to ask about grooming. They're just going to go, shuffle along somewhere. How do you address, or how do you talk to that person?
So all of the major areas, some of them have ungroomed trails and some have groomed trails. So we put out in this daily trail report, we put out what the conditions are for other trails. We also encourage sort of what I call crowdsourcing or community sourcing. And that's one that we've really tried to do, is build community around this information source. So people will send us their photos of the day. They will post onto Instagram and do it at JH Nordic or hashtag JH Nordic. But they'll send us their trip reports with a snapshot of places they might've gone in the national park, places off a trail. On our website, we also have the profile of over 90 trails, both groomed and ungroomed, but with a good little search engine. So you can search there by region, by dog friendly, by groomed, by ungroomed, by fat bike friendly, by snowmobile. by a bunch of different criteria, by the distance, by the steepness. So you can filter and you can actually find trails, and then you can print that map or you can take it with you. And there's a location button as well. So if you pull up a trail on the map and you're at the trailhead, you can say, allow my location, and it'll show where you are along that trail as you ski along, which people really like.
Do you find that people that come to Jackson for a week are signing up for your newsletter? And then if they do, when they depart, are they unsubscribing or are they still just reliving the Jackson life every week?
You know, my guess, when I see an unsubscriber, my guess is that we've done over the years a couple of sweepstakes, and we've done some giveaways where the Nordic Alliance people will donate swag, and we'll create some kind of a giveaway, you know, system of sending a trip report in, you get 5 points, you know, liking us on Facebook, you get so many points and so forth. So what I'm thinking is sometimes people will sign up for a competition, and then maybe a year later, they don't want to be receiving that. I think realistically also, some people will sign up for the daily report, not knowing that there's another choice. And so it's up to us, I think, to communicate again and again that there are more choices. If you only want to see the report once a week, you can do that. And you can also find the report just by going to the website. So if you don't want your inbox cluttered with lots of emails, I find also that a lot of people will refer to their concierge if they're here and staying in a hotel, or they will go on to Jackson Hole Mountain Resort's website, jacksonhole.com. And we have a reference there where people can find us and then find what else there is to do if you're not a downhill skier, or if your knees are tired after a few days, or you're looking for something to do with the family.
Right. You mentioned the concierges at the local hotels. Speak a little bit about the outreach you've done there. I guess it's not really retention as much as just bringing in new people. But speak a little bit to how that's worked for you.
Yeah. So we have a much bigger tourism summer in Jackson Hole than we do in the winter. And with all the summer visitors, one of the things we try to do is make sure we've got our winter maps in the visitor centers, in the Chamber of Commerce. So when summer visitors, hiking and biking visitors come, A, they know that we actually have this incredible Nordic in the winter. But then we also, in the fall, we run a concierge training program. So typically we might take them up to Turpin Meadow, which is a great, you know, ranch summer and winter, has great all around winter Nordic and fat biking and snowshoeing. So we'll try to take them and do a short day and invite them all. This year, you know, we've done it on Zoom for all the different people. We also partner closely with the Chamber of Commerce. And the Chamber of Commerce has hosted in the fall and then early winter, a winter outlook program that included the major ski resorts, JH Nordic, the reservation system. So a lot of business people and people, again, who would be referring both visitors and local people as well. Get them informed about where to go for more information.
Do you find that you have people that come back year after year? So maybe you've got members or subscribers that are that come to Jackson for a week every year. Do you have any?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Huge.
And they stay on your list year round.
I think so. In fact, you know, the interesting thing, I think it was Jen who mentioned something about a CRM. And, you know, currently we've been using MailChimp in a sense as our kind of our major database. We also have other, you know, lists, but I think that the idea of actually creating a CRM where we have more criteria beyond a spreadsheet, I think is an excellent idea. And I think a lot of this, as somebody mentioned, you know, is about finding the number of people who are willing to actually do the background work to, build the CRM database and consolidate and, or even some of the different events that we do. So we do a free event every year where we do free demos. We have all four reps from the main Nordic brands come. We do, it's basically free Nordic, free fat biking, free snowshoeing, tours, lessons, demos. It's a huge, huge carnival. We usually get about 600 people. This year we did not do it, but we will be doing it next year. So combining all these different lists that all the different players have here into one CRM that we could share, I mean, I think it takes time, but I think that that discipline would be very valuable.
Awesome. All right, Nancy, thank you. I'm going to move to Ellen from Jackson, New Hampshire, Nordic. And Ellen, you guys have had a pretty robust newsletter program. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've been using that in terms of retention and just sharing, I guess, what's happening next at Jackson?
Well, it's probably one of our biggest pieces of our marketing, and I feel like I'm not adding as much to this discussion because everyone else is doing so many cool things. But definitely, I mean, every morning we send out an email blast to a list of about 4,000 people, and it's people that have been gathered from back even during Tom Perkins days. And then we add to it and add and subtract as people want to go flow in and out. Includes we invite all season pass holders on, and then some of them will opt out because some people don't want to get their things in their inbox every day. But it's basically like a little Jackson newspaper. I mean, it's got pictures of the day, and there's some skier engagement. It's my happy day when I get three pictures from skiers that I can use that they usually send right to me, and that means I don't have to use one of mine. But there's always something to go in there, and I have a few archive pictures for the days when you really don't want to see what's going on. But yeah, it includes trails to try. I mean, I try to always list suggested routes so that people can, if they're coming here, if they haven't skied here that much lately, they know how to make the best use of their time, whether they want to be in the forest, whether they want to be in a field, do they want to be along a river. And I try to suggest some long routes because sometimes people have a hard time figuring out how to piece a 15 to 20, 30K route together. And so I try to give them different options for that. And always do it. And we don't groom everything every night. We, like in a good day, we'll groom 50K, but there's basically 80 that are part of the regularly able to be groomed network. So trying to figure out what's the best 25K route of the day and whether you want hills or not. So try to have something kind of newsy in there. Along with a picture, and sometimes they're groomer shots. Those are okay too. And then we use it to promote the social activities, whatever level we're doing. I mean, this year, like everyone else, our social activities were cut back. Our biggest thing is Friday Gliders, and it's only 70 people, but they're 70 people who get together and ski every Friday, but not this year. But they're really, they're the ambassadors. They're the people who reach out to the rest of the community. They're the ones who organize their own friends to go skiing. So we're missing that this year, but we have, other activities and trying to use the newsletter to let people know that even if they're not taking part in some of the activities, that by being a season pass holder or even a day ticket buyer, they're contributing to things like Speed Camp, which is sort of it's like Jen's Bill Cope League that isn't really a Bill Cope League. It's sort of a Bill Cope League type experience for kids whose parents haven't quite figured out how to start their own club. And we also we took our ski instructors on the road and went to some local schools just in recognition that a lot of the schools weren't doing programs where they were bringing kids to ski areas this winter. So we brought our ski instructors to their playgrounds pretty regularly this winter. So try and let people know that, you're part of something bigger when you're skiing at Jackson Cross Country Center. Another thing we did this fall was we did a lot of volunteer days, and those were promoted in fall newsletters. And I don't send out a daily newsletter in the fall or off season, but tried to send out, it kind of forced me to send out weekly newsletters to people. And we've got a decent pickup by a lot of the core skiers who certainly out of our retiree set who wanted a social experience. And we did branch clipping every Friday, all fall long. Other stuff we're doing, I mean, and we haven't had as many non-race events, but I always try to do a bounce back coupon for spring skiing. We print a whole bunch of, when I print the coupons that we give out for other things like auctions, I print out a batch for spring skiing. And so they're good from March 1st to the end of the season. Just realizing that especially people who come for events are maybe not as likely to come back and buy a ticket in March. So if we give them a reason to come back, we'll Hopefully they'll bring someone else, or having not a lot of ancillary spends right this year because we're not doing as much in the lodge, but just try to get, remind people to come back here. There is a sort of a concept I learned, back when I was working in downhill skiing, that like the last place you ski in March is probably the first place you'll go to in December. So we try to make people think about that. And we will be selling season passes starting March 1st that are good through the end of this year and all next year. And we obviously take the cash, but we don't book it until next year's revenue. So it's sort of helps with our operating season. Our fiscal year starts on June 1st. So
Ellen, how do you use your newsletter to go after that person who just came up, who's really just a shuffler? They're not going out and skiing 20K, but they're going to go around the field and be done with it. You know, that truly recreational person who's only skied a couple times or is a newbie entirely. And then a second part to that is, how do you capture those names?
We're not doing as great a job at capturing as we could. We do, thanks to you helped me find a person who would input our rental forms from last year. So occasionally I don't send to those people every day, but I will send to them maybe like once a week. On Thursdays, I usually send up to more people just because some people only want to get the email once a week. And I really don't know if we're getting that much off of our rental list, to be honest with you, but it's, it's a starting point. But that's why in the suggested tours, there's always like a golf course tour. There's a completely flat tour. There's a scenic tour that is 2 kilometers. And I periodically try to promote, if you want to get to the next level, I can't remember how I worded it, but I did it nicely. Basically, if you want to get out and ski more of our trails, most of them have a small hill. And if you can conquer that small hill, then it opens up the door to a vast number of skiing experiences. And we have sold more level 2 type classic lessons this year. And we've been doing seasonal programs like four Saturdays in a row, Learn to Skate. We've done more of those this year. And then we added Improve Your Classic Skiing. And for the first time, we were able to fill a 4-week session program with classic skiing, which makes me so incredibly happy because there are so many people who think that once they don't fall, that they have learned to ski. And I'm a classic first skier. And so it just getting them to understand about gliding and being able to know that once you can climb a small hill, it's not even, you don't even feel like you're going up a hill anymore. So, I'm going to push classic skiing. I'm going to keep, it was encouraging to see a classic session fill. So.
Right. Do you have a format for capturing names of that person who comes in and just buys a ticket?
We do not.
You do not. Okay.
Yeah. Flat out. Yeah.
And to Ellen's point, she, Kisses actually partnered with a mom and pop data entry group out of, Tennessee or someplace down south. And if anybody wants that contact, they're very inexpensive and they're quite efficient. I've used them for many, many projects. And I know Ellen did this year. Awesome, Ellen. Thank you. Christy, if we could go to you from Crested Butte. And I know we did have a question or two about your CRM. In the last couple of minutes, if you can just share a little bit about how that works, who built it. I know you've got an internal person, I believe, who's pretty handy with programming. Can you tell us a little bit about that CRM and how you use it?
Yeah, I think about 3 years ago, we hired some consultants and have a full-time staff person who helps us administer a Salesforce CRM. And you can build it to do whatever you want. So we have built it out over the last few years to manage all of our programs, season pass sales, donations, etc. Much of it is automated at this point, but it does require some substantial input. But it was worth it for us because there's no program that does all the different things that we do, all the events, all the after school programs. You know, we're not just a club. We're not just a rental shop. So the only thing that we don't automatically input is our day pass users, but our online rental system does track all of those separately, and Square does track all of our customers that walk up in person. So we can choose to import that to our CRM if we would like to, but it's really, it's just catapulted us into the 21st century. And we are able to look up any of our members, figure out, you know, what other programs they're involved with. And it's just really valuable if I'm like, oh, I want to know how many of our master's participants race in our alley loop. You know, we can find that out immediately, or we can just target those people immediately. And we do also use MailChimp, and we do currently have to manually update those lists, but we've learned how to do that, and we are looking for smoother solutions, but that is what we currently do. So yeah, we really like having that information, and it's something that our programs manager does. It's a lot of what she does in her off season during the summer. It takes someone. That's the problem, is that it takes a person to really manage it. And if she ever leaves, we're totally screwed.
How many hours a week do you suppose that person puts into that? I mean, is this, you know, I'm just thinking for people that are thinking about systems that they need to bring in, what sort of a time commitment is that?
You know, you can set up something like that just with a consultant. It probably costs us a couple grand to get it going. And then you can train someone internally to do it and just be a few hours a week most of the time. But then I'd say overall, it's probably 10, maybe 15% of this person's year-round duties are kind of Salesforce administration and management. And it might have been that first year up to like 40%. But now that it's up and going, it works really well. And there's other CRMs you can use. And there are other platforms that have CRM functionality, but it's hard. We couldn't find one that worked across all of our programs. So we just built it. And now we're even talking about like building our own rental software if, you know, our current one can't get with it or that sort of thing. So having some, and again, it doesn't have to be full-time staff person. Like there's, especially with Salesforce, there's tons of consultants that can help you get it going. We've got one. Okay. Can refer. So, you know, but it does take some dedicated learning. And again, if this person ever were to leave, I would keep them on as a consultant because we'd have to.
Right.
There's another large outfitter in our town who is right now hiring for a full-time Salesforce manager, but they have global operations. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Ellen, just quick question back to you. Who does your newsletter? How much time does that take on a daily basis when you're in season?
I do it. It takes about an hour in the morning, and it. I can't wait for April. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it takes me about a half an hour to kind of unwind after it, because it's just. I mean, I deal with the groomer. I mean, I hear from the groomers. So it's. I mean, it's like we have to put out a ski report. So the hard part is writing that cheerful paragraph. If I'm smart, I put the pictures in the night before.
Right.
You know, I queue it up as much as possible. And then some mornings I realize I didn't do it the night before. But, you know, it's a cheerful, upbeat. It's really the biggest thing is a cheerful, upbeat paragraph. The list of the trails that make the most sense for that day. And sometimes it's kind of try to educate them, you know, like today it's 34 degrees and raining. So no, we didn't groom everything, but don't let that keep you off the trails. It's like, it's not, so
yeah,
it's awesome. It's trying to educate them in a cheerful way about what's going on.
Great.
And then sharing the joy when it's beautiful, be like, if you're not here, you're sad, you know?
Right. Awesome. We're at a minute past three, so I'm sorry for going over. I think we deviated a little bit from our hardcore retention conversation, but it was still really good stuff. So special thanks to our presenters, Roger Lord, Jen Santoro, Nancy Leone, Ellen Chandler, and of course I pulled Christy in, so thank you. We are scheduled for a one more Zoom call end of March. We may push that to early April, and we'll definitely keep you guys appraised of what happens next. The audio of this will be on the website on Monday, so if anyone needs to go back or wants to share it with anyone else in their organization, you are able to do that. And other than that, have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for spending an hour with us, and look forward to talking to you all soon.